Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't shut, you see? I know the story, just listen to me. Talk.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And good afternoon in the lower 48 states. Karen Cataline with you with our trademarked and growing by leaps and bounds talk radio internet live call-in show spouting off. I have been jazzed about this show for a while. I have a terrific guest coming on after the first break. We're going to be doing this just like talk radio in the terrestrial world. And, you know, terrestrial world's trying to do it more like internet world. So whatever, we're all working at this and getting her done. I should be celebrating this. Can't wait for my 100th show. This is my 75th show of spouting off. All 75 of them, after this one's done, will be available for your listening pleasure or annoyance at www.karencataline.com. There are some wonderful things that I could talk about in this first monologue. And I don't know if, Doug, did you get that audio that I sent you? Didn't talk to you about that. Doug, do you have that audio? If you don't, that's okay. Not yet. Okay, that's all right. I just want to pay a little tribute to 50 years ago today. I had a little audio sound. It's all right. We don't have to use it. But do go look at it. The Apollo 11 began its voyage into American history. Reading this on YouTube, the Saturn V rocket carrying the astronauts Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins. I remember where I was. I was about 12. And I was home alone with my brother, watching this whole thing in a marathon in my mother's bedroom. And I remember so clearly what I was doing, watching, trying to avoid my brother from teasing me. It was an amazing time to witness. And in fact, I remember that not long after the astronauts landed on the moon, Ted Kennedy had his Chappaquiddick incident, and I'm going to be watching to see whether or not the media will be celebrating that 50th anniversary in about a week or two. The reason that's so important and why I thought it was important to bring it up today in this first segment is because we all had a collective experience of the Apollo 11 moonshot. And we were all watching live. We didn't have DVDs. We didn't have cable. We didn't have any of that. If you wanted to watch it, you had to find a TV to watch it. Now, I'm not saying I'm waxing philosophical for those days, but I had an experience over the weekend that just brought home clearly to me that I have to write another op-ed. I've got about three or four in the back room that I have to dust off. If only I had a whole nother clone, I could be writing op-eds. I don't know when. I just keep getting these ideas that I have to write op-eds about. And this one, I really, really want to write about. It might take me a little while because I've got a lot of projects in the works at the moment. I'm hoping we'll be able to break a little bit of news next week about the project that I'm doing, which has to do with being a spokesperson for the gubernatorial recall in Colorado called Dismiss Polis. So I've been doing a lot of media for that, learning a great, great deal. So here's what I learned with regard to that little aha that I got to write the op-ed about. And that is that I attended with pleasure my 10th, another anniversary, my 10th Western Conservative Summit. It is always held around this time of year. It's kind of like a CPAC for the Western states. And every year it's gotten better and better. And I've never missed one. This year was no exception, except the fact that I got to have a press pass. And I was so jazzed about that. I got to sit in the back with my computer, taking notes and tweeting. And I was in hog heaven. Anyway, I don't like paying too much money for hotels. So I found myself an Airbnb within walking distance of the convention center downtown. And I had most of the place to myself because the couple hosts were working a whole lot. They turned out to be just lovely people. I've had good Airbnb experiences and bad ones. This one was very, very positive. And there was a television in my room, and I wanted there to be a television in my room because when I got tired, I could at least watch the evening session of the Western Conservative Summit from my room. So what did I do? I spent an hour trying to figure out this Fire Stick. I don't have a Fire Stick. I know a lot of people use it so that they don't have to use cable, so that they can reduce their costs and not have to pay for cable. And I certainly am for that. I'm always for a good deal somewhere. But after spending a half an hour trying to find live television on a Fire Stick, I realized that the younger generation is experiencing media in an entirely different way than when we did. And you don't have to be over 50 and to have watched the Apollo moonshot to appreciate that. Nowadays, and I was only beginning to understand it, I've stayed at other Airbnbs that had a Fire Stick. I just ignored the whole thing. I didn't have the time to worry about it. But this time I had a little time, so I tried desperately to figure this out. And what I concluded is that for the most part, you get to be your own program director. You get to decide, I want to watch the third episode of the fifth season of Two and a Half Men, whatever it is. And then you get to make your own media life. That's an interesting thing. It's nice to have all those choices, but somehow I wonder, now I know there's live television on the Fire Stick, but I was not able to succeed in getting it. I swear I could not find it until finally I gave up. I could watch it online, and maybe one day a young person will tell me that, oh yeah, they can watch live television. I just haven't figured it out. But it got me thinking about young people in general and how much they pick and choose what they hear and see based on their own interests. Nothing wrong with that. But where's the unifying collective experience, like an Apollo moonshot, like, God forbid, 9/11? Some of these kids who get their news from Facebook usually get it 24, 48 hours later. Or maybe they get it not so long after. Maybe it's quite immediate. News, after all, is more immediate than ever. But they get it on video after the fact. They don't get to experience it and watch it all together as one country. And that is in line with this kind of fragmentation in the culture today. We know, because we talk about it all the time, the split in the culture from left and right. And if you watch CNN, MSNBC, watch the New York Times, the Washington read the Washington Post or the New York Times, you're going to get a whole different story than you get anywhere else. And you pretty much, if you're savvy, and a lot of people are savvier than ever, they start to know what they can expect from different so-called journalists, because the line between reportage and commentary, which is what I do, has been blurred to within non-existent. There really is no reportage much anymore. That's why citizen journalists are doing such a good job, like James O'Keefe and others, who are trying to expose the corruption in our government, because they're doing the job that the legacy media refuses to do. So not only do we celebrate the Apollo 11 moonshot, which we're probably going to be really celebrating in about, what, 3 or 4 days, I forget the exact day, when the three astronauts actually landed on the moon, there are people who don't believe that. They believe Trump is a racist, but they don't believe we landed on the moon. Anyway, I digress. We have... it'll be really fun to see what kind of tributes we have for Apollo 11, because, you know, I've heard many people who are more scientifically oriented than I say how the cell phone that we carry in our pocket has as much technology as the mission to space did way back when. The mission to space was extraordinary in what it was able to accomplish. And I'm pleased that among the many reasons that I appreciate the current president is the can-do attitude of bringing back the space program, bringing back the we're America, we can do anything. I did a debate earlier today, which I'm going to try to get up on my website, KarenCataline.com, because I keep getting asked to do these debates for a Canadian station in Vancouver. And they always put me with the same liberal. He claims not to be a liberal, but if you hear him talk, he pretty much parrots the liberal lines, the liberal talking points. We have a wonderful time. It's feisty, it's hot, but it's civil. And I did that about a couple of hours ago, and I do hope to put that up on my website. And it was just amazing how liberals pick and choose the information that they want. The hot topic right now, if you're going to be listening on the podcast later, is this kerfuffle between the Fab Four hard leftists who have made no secret of the fact that they hate America, they hate Jews, and they hate Donald Trump, and Donald Trump simply not backing down, and the left uniting and calling him a racist. I probably don't have time to go into as much detail as I would like about all of that, but suffice to say, go to my website and go read, if you would please, if you would be so kind, to read my latest blog, called, I got to remember it by memory here, The Left Gets to Decide. Why does the left get to decide what is and isn't racist for the rest of us? And I'm paraphrasing, when they can't recognize it in their own ranks. The level of hubris that the left has, non-citizens lecture us about what it is to be American. Bigots lecture us on what it is and is not to be a bigot. And Donald Trump is laughing and speaking for many of us, saying, well, that's just ridiculous. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. If you don't like it, you can leave. And what does the left do immediately? Call him a racist for saying that. They're always divining and defining racism. Every time I raise my arm, I get a Charlie horse in my back. So if you hear me going, that's what I was doing. I won't do that anymore till the end of the show. The left thinks that they can define and divine the definition of racism. Don't let them do it. Don't let them do it anymore. I mean, the word hypocrisy, you can't even use that word anymore. So they are willing to say without a doubt, absolutely, it does not bear any discussion that we've decided Trump is a racist because he told four women to leave if they hate this country so much. He never said what color they were. They just assumed it. They divined it. He never said it had anything to do with their ethnicity. They divined it. They're acting as if they are anti-American. And I don't care if they were born here or not. It has nothing to do with ethnicity. But as I said to the debater, my co-debater a couple hours ago, how come these four people called Nancy Pelosi a racist? And we just hope that people will begin to realize, you know, I'm not fond of Nancy Pelosi, not even a little bit. But I don't think she's a racist. So I hope people watching at home, this is what I said in my blog this week, will begin to understand that the white people, the Christians, the conservatives, the people that simply dare to disagree with leftist socialist ideology, they're not racists either. It's getting really old. It's crying wolf, and I got to take a break. So after this break, we're going to bring on our guest a lot earlier than I might ordinarily, because I want the time to really chat with my friend Melissa. And we're going to talk with Melissa. She's a PhD candidate in psychology. And we got to talking on Twitter. Now, I've known Melissa for quite some time, but we got to talking on Twitter. And I will tell you after the break why I decided to bring her on. So stay with us. This is Spouting Off. And this is your proud and not always so humble host, Karen Cataline. We'll be right back.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
And we're back, Karen Cataline with you, and you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio, Station 1. I am delighted, and I've been looking forward to this for a while, to have with us a friend, and I consider her whole family friends. Her name is Melissa. Don't know if she wants me to use her last name. Melissa, do you want me to use your last name? Is that all right?
You're welcome to if you'd like. Sure.
Okay, great. Well, this is Melissa Rudd, and she received her BA in German from Dartmouth College. I mean, she is an Ivy League chick. And her master's in divinity from Harvard Divinity School. She also studied Jewish texts in Israel for 2 years and has work experience as a paralegal and educational consultant. She's a bright lady. Currently, she's pursuing her PhD in clinical psychology at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and she plans to focus her research on the psychological dynamics and underlying political and cultural divides in the U.S. Perfect person to have as my guest. Welcome to Spouting Off, Melissa.
Thank you very much, Karen. I'm happy to be talking with you.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, so the reason I was so looking forward to having you is because among my many posts on Facebook, and you're on Facebook too, I posted something about the LGBT community in which I said, this is what got you going, and I love that. I love that. As soon as it got you going, I said, oh, I got to have Melissa on if she'll do it. What I said, and I paraphrase, was that the left was actually creating or promoting gender dysphoria in the young. And
yes,
we can branch off from there, but I think that was the core issue that got you going. Tell us why that bothered you so much, and then we'll jump right in and have a discussion about it.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, you are correct. That was most certainly the core issue that got me going. And the problem I had with that statement is it's definitely not accurate. And the way in which it's not accurate is, well, okay, it seems to assume, for it to make any sense at all, it would have to assume that being trans, identifying as transgender, is the same thing, identical to having gender dysphoria. And the two are clearly highly correlated, but they are not identical. And I just like, for all your listeners and for you, just to make sure we're all on the same page right now, I'd like to make sure that we're all clear on how gender dysphoria is defined officially, right, by the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association.
Okay, go right ahead.
I will be happy to. So it's long. I'm not going to read every single symptom.
Yeah, don't try to.
But obviously, the basic thing is you identify with a different gender than the biological sex you were assigned at birth. That part I assume we agree on. But secondly, this is associated with clinically significant distress and or impairment in various areas of your life. And the point that I'm trying to make here is, yes, many people who go on to live as trans initially do so because they experience gender dysphoria, but living as trans is actually what helps them no longer be experiencing this mental illness, right? So it is not the same thing to have gender dysphoria and to be trans. In fact, being trans is often a treatment for it.
Okay. And let's stop there for just a second because I get where you're coming from.
Okay.
Did you want to go on? Because I want to kind of take this point by point a little bit.
Sure. I guess if I could just make one more brief point.
Sure, please.
Because I don't think I quite clarified why I was upset by your statement.
Okay.
What bothered me about your statement was, given that we now know what gender dysphoria means, you seemed to be stating that parents or educators were, whether intentionally or not, causing their children to be deeply, deeply distressed by the gender that they were told they were supposed to have, right?
No, that's not what I meant at all.
Okay, maybe it would be helpful for you to clarify what you did then, because that was what made me upset.
Yeah, I want to just let our audience know, number one, when there's a disagreement on Facebook, a lot of people have flying opinions back and forth, and it's rarely a forum for being able to have a truly meaningful discussion. I almost purposefully decided to have Melissa on so we could talk about it without really going into too much detail beforehand. I didn't want to hash it out there. I wanted to hash it out on the radio because this is what people do in their living rooms. Okay.
True.
Before I answer your question, I'll let you ask me that question. I want to know, since you said, you got upset by saying that the left is promoting gender dysphoria, and so
I think your words
you
were
wanted
inculcating
to make
gender dysphoria, but
sorry,
same
what?
Idea. Yeah.
What?
I think your words were inculcating gender dysphoria.
Inculcating, that's fine.
The same
you
idea,
can say
yes.
That. But does that mean, since you made a distinction between transgender and gender dysphoria, does that mean you also agree that the left is not inculcating transgenderism either? Or do you agree with me that the left is indeed inculcating transgenderism?
I think I know what the left is doing from my perspective, and I think you might interpret that as inculcating transgenderism. I don't think I would agree, but I think it's a much more reasonable interpretation than the notion of inculcating gender dysphoria, which
okay,
is just,
so
I don't even
do
know how
think
that would
the
be
left
possible.
Is, what do you think the left is doing then? Because I have a feeling we'll probably definitely disagree with that.
Well, first of all, I think talking about, quote, the left as sort of this huge homogenous group is always questionable, right?
That's true.
No, they're not at all. I mean,
but
that kind of reminds me of the left, as you call it, saying, you know, the right is all motivated by racism. Like, that's ridiculous, in part because the right is not this big blob toward which you can make humongous generalizations.
Okay, that aside, what do you think they're doing?
I think transgender advocates and LGBT advocates generally are trying to create a culture and a society in which individuals who are trans are accepted as trans and are not pressured not to be that way. I think they think it is better for trans mental health, better for the health of these individuals, if they are allowed to live in the way that is mentally most healthy for them without pressure or routine condemnation or judgment or the assumption that, you know, there's something wrong with them and they need to go back and live in a way that's not mentally good for them, because that's
okay.
How other people want them to live.
Melissa, do you think that any social stigma is a bad thing, no matter what it is, that somehow if you could take away the social stigma of various things, that it would be better for someone's mental health? Do you think any social stigma is actually positive?
Karen, I'm happy to answer that, but before we get to that, sorry, I just I just want to make sure here, because as you noted, my initial objection to what you were saying was the claim of inculcating gender dysphoria. I just want to be sure that you understand why that struck me as problematic.
Well, I disagree. Okay.
Well, and, right. And, okay, so you disagree with what, though? I'm not clear. Like, we may well disagree on something, but I hope it's not this, because the definition of the term is pretty clear.
No, we're allowed to disagree on anything we want. You know,
well,
this is
you
still
may,
America. But
you may disagree, but I'm hoping we have the same definition of the word, which comes from the same medical manual. If not, then you're just, you know, disagreeing with the American Psychiatric Association, which is fine, but you should admit when you're disagreeing with them rather than sort of using their words and pretending that your views are their views.
Okay, good. I am of the opinion, Melissa, that one should question everything. Yes, one needs to learn and listen and pay attention, but just because it's the American Psychiatric Association, you know that I have a master's degree in social work from Columbia University, and I remember the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 3 and 4. I guess now we're on 5 and 6, right?
We're on 5. It is
five,
currently
okay.
DSM-5.
Well, yeah. I haven't been in the field for a while, but I was in the field. I practiced in the field. What's interesting to me is, and I do have this position, the mental health field is an art, not a science. And if you were to compare social work, and we are getting a little far afield here, and I'm going to have to take a break, and then I promise you I will tell you and clarify for you what I meant by inculcating gender dysphoria, because that's the main reason I brought you on. But to just give a little background here, the terms have changed. The DSM has tried to normalize certain things that it never thought was, quote, normal before. And we don't want to get off on that tangent, because that's not particularly therapeutic to tell someone they're abnormal. That's not where I'm going. Where I'm going is that mental health in general is very definitely an art, not a science. So I don't take them and their positions as a Bible. 90% plus of people in the mental health field are way left of center, or left of center, or some variation of left. And they're trying to keep up with a culture that is dictating something that I think is profoundly dangerous to the culture. And so that's my position. I don't really care what the DSM 3 or 5 says. And I frankly didn't care that much way back when, because I didn't find it particularly helpful. Let me just finish.
Sorry.
I didn't find it particularly helpful to put people in categories. Yes, it can help you understand certain mental illnesses, but what people call mental illness, what they used to call 50 years ago, is not what they call it today. So as a clinician, you have to start with the client, as you well know.
Okay, so Karen, we clearly agree about some things and disagree about others, but it is quite clear to me now, checking the DSM-4 diagnosis, that also in DSM-4, one had to have significant distress, impairment, etc., to be diagnosed with gender dysphoria. So certainly, I am not asserting that you need to be in agreement with the DSM about all things. However, when you use a term which is specifically a term from the DSM, you can't just define it however you want. You, like, if I say, you know, bipolar 1, cyclothymia, schizophrenia with negative symptoms, generally when I use psychiatric terms, I use them in the way they are defined psychiatrically, and that is the appropriate way to use them, even if I then want to go argue that they're wrong. I would hope you would agree with that.
All right, but that's, of course, not what I think is most interesting. I mean, you can say, you know, whatever you want to say. I want, after the break, and we have a short break, so it's not going to be very long, for us to get into what I meant, and then I'll give you all the time that I, you know, as much time as you need to disagree, to tell me I'm crazy, whatever you want to do, after I tell you why I said that the left is inculcating and or promoting either transgenderism or gender dysphoria, take your pick. Can you hang on with me while we take a break? And we'll come right back.
Sounds good.
Sounds great. You can say a lot of things about Melissa's position, but you cannot call Melissa Rudd unintelligent. Every one of her family members is incredibly bright. We are going to take a break. This is Spouting Off, and we will come back and dive right in to the heart of this issue. You're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio, and I'm your host, Karen Cataline. Stay with us.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
We're back. You're listening to Spouting Off, and I am pleased to have with us Melissa Rudd, a PhD student in Bowling Green State University. Very, very educated young woman with very different opinions than myself. I'm going to try, Melissa. Thanks for staying with us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try as quick as best I can to be succinct, because I have a lot of passion about this. You have read my book called Fat Lash Food Police and the Fear of Thin. And I want as quickly as I can to tell you why I said what I said. And I didn't really have time to back it up on Facebook, but I have time now. That's one of the great things about having a show of your own. Okay. So you've asked me to explain, what do I mean by promoting gender dysphoria or promoting transgenderism? I'm going to zero in primarily on the young people, minors, people younger than the age of consent. I wrote a piece, and this is only by example, called Why I Reported the Case of an 11-Year-Old Drag Queen to Child Protective Services. The left has been engaged in an active, virulent campaign to introduce into the culture at very, very early, very young ages, things like gender fluidity, which is utter nonsense, in my opinion. You can disagree if you wish. Gender fluidity, which when children are young and vulnerable, and if you tell them they're really not a boy, they're a girl, and you're creating gender confusion in young people who don't even know how the birds and bees, they haven't even gotten the birds and bees yet. We've got the left that is, in my opinion, superimposing their political ideologies on very vulnerable young children, telling them that they might be gay, when those kids don't even know how sex happens yet. It just drives me crazy. Drag Queen Story Hour. We've got, I just pulled some of these things that I've been talking about. Drag Queen in the Maryland Library exposed as a lurid sex-oriented business post-pornography. Everything is okay. Now we have forced LGBTQ sex education in order to normalize. Now, my position is if a kid wants to grow up to be a drag queen, when he or she, and it's always men becoming women, not the other way around, because the culture seems to want to promote the demasculinization of men and turn them into women or confused men, or they're playing with fire, in my opinion. Gender dysphoria, it makes total sense to me that a person would have distress because they don't know if they're a boy or a girl, and a lot of that confusion is being created by the culture for political reasons, and they don't care a whit about children. I could go on, but I want to give you time to respond. I think you know where I'm going with this. This is indeed promoting transgenderism when it used to be very rare, and it is very rare. We're talking about, forgive me, I have to take another 2 minutes, when someone maybe had three chromosomes. Gender dysphoria was not a very big population, and now it's the new in thing. I wholly disagree. I think the culture is sick, and it is promoting this under the guise of all transgenders are victims, 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 and gay people are victims, 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 even though we've bent over backwards to tolerate and to I'm sorry I haven't been as clear as I wanted to be, but this makes me crazy.
I think you've been pretty clear from my perspective.
I think I've been clear. You have the floor, Melissa Rudd. Go for it.
All right. Thank you. Well, I appreciate you sharing your view. I certainly have a lot to say in response. I have multiple points where I want to either clarify or disagree with you. Thing one, though, I am encouraged by the fact that you now seem to be saying promoting transgenderism, because that at least is not blatantly and provably incorrect. I think that is an accurate statement of what you are concerned about happening, and I applaud you for using correct language about it.
You're welcome.
Secondly, yes, thank you. Secondly, again, so one statement you made, the left has been engaged in an active virulent campaign. I certainly think many people on the left are engaged in various types of campaigns, and I certainly think there are some very, very radical people on the left who are not the most nuanced in how they apply their ideas, but I think this is your point of view strikes me as also not very nuanced, to be honest. Like, it seems like you're sort of conflating everyone on the left and acting as if they are motivated solely by bias and not by science, which is not accurate.
No, let me clarify that one point, and I will let you continue. I wouldn't expect you to have listened to my show for very long or at all, but by way of expediency, I want you to know that I draw a huge difference between left-wing strategists who create these insane ideas and then people on the bandwagon run with them. And that's very different. Plus, I draw a distinction between the left or leftism and perhaps liberalism, and the Democrat Party. I think if you spend a lot of time trying to define words, you're really avoiding the issue because I think
our ability to use the same words to mean the same thing is actually an essential thing that we need to be able to have meaningful conversations.
And that's why the left keeps
clarity about terms
redefining our language regularly.
You're not entirely wrong about that, but if I can get back to the substance here, because I think we do disagree on some substance.
Please do.
So, okay, thing number one, you made some statement regarding telling them that they're not really a boy, they're a girl. Now, I am not sure that that has never happened in the history of the world. And if it were to happen, if you take a boy and you're like, hey, dude, you're a girl, you can't agree, you can't be a boy, that sounds very problematic to me. However, that is quite clearly not what most people advocating for teaching the idea of gender being along a spectrum are
advocating. How do you explain this preposterous notion that gender is fluid, and that's what they're teaching little kids?
This is not a preposterous notion. It is an empirical fact, given that there are people who experience their gender as fluid, and there are a decent number of them. But I think this is really the issue between us. I am
just
not saying,
just because you experience something doesn't make it fact. So now you're saying, are there really more than two genders, do you believe?
I don't think that many people would say there, well, maybe some people would. I don't think one needs to think there are, quote, more than two genders. I think the point that many are making is rather that the whole thing is along a spectrum. It's not necessarily this readily divisible thing, like either or categorical. People define it various places in between. But just quickly, before we get to that, I'd like to make a point. So another thing you said, they might be gay when they don't even know how sex happens yet, and you find this concerning that they're aware that being gay is a phenomenon. I mean, the thing is, being gay, when one comes to be attracted to people, is in fact a phenomenon. I believe like 4.5% of the U.S. population openly identifies as LGBTQ.
It's 2%.
Right now.
It's 2%.
I read a study very recently. I'll be happy to send it to you. It's 4.5%.
So people are born gay. It's not changeable, right?
I think it depends on the people. But Karen, the point is, many people, when they grow up, and it's a greater number in younger generations because there's less stigma, many people, when they come to be attracted to people, are attracted to people of the same sex. That happens. Telling
of
kids that that
does.
Is a phenomenon.
You know what?
Yes,
I have totally lost track of the clock here. I'm like 10 minutes over the clock. We were going to take a break.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. This is great. Wait a minute. So I don't know when our break is, but this is a fascinating discussion. Doug, can we continue or do we have to take a break? Your call. Doug? Okay, I can't hear him, so I'm just going to keep on going. We'll put all our commercials at the at the end, whatever. Forgive me for changing the subject. Let's go back to something you said. You said there's a continuum of gender, right? Something like that.
Being
the scientist, I would think that you would appreciate that there is an objective fact of whether someone is born male or born female. I don't care what they experience.
You're talking about biological sex at the moment.
There are chromosomes
that determine biological sex. I would agree.
Gender, it is not fluid.
They are not the same thing. Sex
what is not the same
refers
thing?
To one's chromosomes. Gender refers to the gender, the social role, et cetera, that one takes in the world, the people one identifies with socially, et cetera.
And this is what they're teaching you at Bowling Green University, that all this gobbledygook, forgive me, about, you know, just because you experience something, you get to make it so, and then you get to feel like a
victim. No, that is not at all what they're teaching. I will tell you what they are teaching us. Here is one
thing
they're teaching us.
What are they teaching you?
They are teaching us that it is important to actually read scientific studies and make one's decision about mental health or lack thereof based on the results of scientific studies. So, while I am sure there are many on the right, maybe otherwise, who would love to find that people who are transgender just by being transgender, you know, are mentally unhealthy in other ways, that is not what the studies show. In fact,
I never said that. That's not even
okay,
my point.
But your point seems to be that being transgender itself is some sort of, that we have evidence that makes one mentally unfit or mentally ill.
No, that was never
and
my
it
point.
Doesn't.
And
okay.
And here's the thing that I thought was so interesting on our Facebook discussion. People immediately are triggered, to use a term, in something that they think the other person said that I never said. I'm not
you
trying
did,
to
in
give
fact,
a pejorative
use the term gender dysphoria
listen,
in an inaccurate
listen.
Way. So that
let me
is
finish my
said.
Sentence, okay? I'm not trying to give to make it pejorative. I really, frankly, don't care whether someone identifies or doesn't identify, is a drag queen or is not, is gay or is not. You know that I was in the theater for well over 30 years, and it doesn't matter to me if an adult either wants to be gay, is gay, thinks they're gay, or thinks they're transgender. None of that matters to me. But it's interesting that some people are so sensitive that this group, the LGBT group, is so victimized and is playing victimhood to the hilt that we can't even have a discussion without saying, well, they've been marginalized and they've been victims.
Accurately,
and we have to,
they in fact are victims very frequently of crimes committed against
victims.
Them because of their, they when people kill them or beat them up due to their sexuality or gender, they are in fact victims in those circumstances.
All right, let me ask you something. What do you know about the Matthew Shepard case? I'm not saying that has never happened. I'm not saying that people have not been killed. You know as well as I that people have been killed for a whole host of reasons, including being
among
in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Among them, sexual orientation and gender. Are you seriously
Melissa,
trying to assert
what do you know about the Matthew Shepard case?
I do not know much, and I really don't want to discuss the details of that case, but I have looked very recently into stats regarding crimes committed against...
All right, so you don't know about the case, but do you know... I would encourage you to go and read a book by a gay man named Jimenez, can't remember his first name, in which he exposed the fact that the whole Matthew Shepard agenda-driven gays are victims, and he was like the gay Jesus because he was killed for being gay, is not true.
Okay,
and
Karen, whether one individual was killed for being gay or not, you know perfectly well, is irrelevant to whether or not people are in fact killed for being gay. I
yes,
understand that this is
Melissa,
persuasive, but it is not relevant to the fact
that
these things
relevant.
Happen.
It is relevant. Here's why it's relevant. I'm sorry that Matthew Shepard was killed for any reason. The reason it's relevant is because it makes the point that there is indeed a politically motivated group that refuses to pay attention to actual facts, and you're a big one on facts, on that particular case. Because, let me finish, they have raised money off that case, they have created a foundation on that case, and they created, birthed an entire political movement based on that case.
Karen, are you suggesting that there is not discrimination, especially historically, that there's not mistreatment of people based on the fact that they're gay, that there's not stigma against being gay?
There's mistreatment of people because they wear brown shoes, Melissa. There's mistreatment of people.
Okay, Karen, let's say our country was in the mode of looking down on people who wore brown shoes, and this, I mean, okay, I guess they would change their shoe, but that's a choice they have. Let's say our country was saying, you know, Jews are bad. They are just inherently inferior. But let's say the country was saying they were inherently inferior because they were Jewish. Would your response be, oh, well, that's okay because, you know, people dislike people? I doubt it. Right?
No.
Like, when groups are treated poorly as a result of who they are, it is not good, and it is reasonable to fight against.
You are filibustering now. Okay.
No, I am trying to make a logical analogy.
You're diverting the discussion into whether it's okay personally and subjectively. What we're talking about here is policy.
I'm saying
morally.
What
we're talking about here
is it okay to have a
What?
I'm saying, is it okay morally to treat people poorly based on something that many of them do not have control over?
Do you want to impose your morals on the rest of the country and the rest of the world? Do you want to do that? I think we need to make...
I have no ability to impose my morals on anyone, but I assumed that you agreed with me and that most decent people agreed with me that, for example, you know, looking down on Jews and then treating them worse, beating them up, et cetera, because they're Jewish is a bad thing.
This is why you wanted to define terms and you wanted to clarify certain things. And that's why clarification right now is something I'd like to do. What I personally think is morally correct or not is quite different than what I support concerning policy. All right? So just because I subjectively... Let me finish.
Do
not interrupt me.
Just
because I personally might have a problem, for example, with prostitution, does not mean that I think it's the government's job to make it illegal. Nor do I think that the government ought to make special rights and special privileges for a group that it deems to be victimized. That's not equality. That's giving special rights. And if a crime is committed against a human being for whatever the reason, then that person needs to be prosecuted. We can change the culture and persuade people that disliking people for this, that, or the other thing is wrong. That's a lot different than giving special rights to certain groups and demagoguing an issue, claiming that they're all more victims than anybody else. That's demagoguery, and it suits the leftist ideology that wants to turn all of us into a collectivist group. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, there were a lot of assertions going in there. First of all, I have no idea where you got the idea that I support giving special rights to anyone. I very much support changing the culture to not beat up on people who are
well. That's not you personally. That's the leftist ideology that does support that.
That
I'm
may well be true, but
did.
What we're
I'm
talking about right now and what you're bringing up involves educating people about the fact that there are gay people out there, there are trans people out there, and they are not inferior, and they are not somehow like
Melissa. Are people allowed to dislike or disapprove of gay people for their lifestyle? Are people allowed to do that?
People are allowed to do whatever they want, but I certainly don't think it's ideal for people to look down on other people when they have done nothing wrong.
Well, you're looking down perhaps on Christians who say that lifestyle is wrong. If the person
I disagree with those individuals, that does not equate to looking down on them.
All right, fine.
There's another point that you've made elsewhere, though, which I think is important to touch on, too. So you had this big point about the demasculinization of men and that this is the agenda.
Correct.
I would just like to note So actually, I am involved in research on that particular paper and the responses to it. I do think there was some vague definition of terms and stuff going on that particular APA paper. However, that said,
what paper are you talking about? My audience doesn't know what paper you're referring to.
The American Psychological Association.
They just know toxic masculinity is now the new big thing. And if you're male, you have to feel bad about yourself because you're male.
Okay, that's a distortion of the point. Basically, the APA, American Psychological Association, came out against certain ways of relating to reality as a male, including things like thinking you have to be stoic all the time, looking down on women, not wanting to present emotional vulnerability, and said,
that's
generally, this is not very healthy.
View, isn't it?
As
saying all men feel
view.
That way because
no.
they're male?
No, of course not. It didn't say all men feel that way. That was the whole point. It was saying, hey, men, it's healthier for you if you try not to be this way because it's not very good for you.
How arrogant.
Dude, Karen, you think it's arrogant for people to, like, do scientific studies on an issue for 30 years and then publish the findings of those studies?
I think it's arrogant for the academic community that lives in a bubble to tell the entire culture, we think we know what you ought to do to be a better male. I mean, the Gillette commercial.
Karen, there
was
no
perfect.
Claim about being a better male. There was
to be a more morally acceptable male.
There was no
nonsense.
Claim about being a more morally acceptable male. There was a claim that there have been many, many studies on many, many men, and they found that although in some circumstances these traits are useful, for example, if you're fighting a war, it's good to be able to be stoic. In many other contexts, these traits result in suffering for those who feel they have to adhere to them. This is scientific research. I understand and I agree with the fact that most academics are, in fact, liberal, but that does not mean that everything they say is motivated solely by politics. You can't just, like, throw out all the scientific findings you don't like and claim that they're nothing but politics
and
because you don't
that
like them.
So then, Melissa, if we know that the psychology and the supposed principles of the mental health community has changed along with political climate. I mean, there was a time in which gay was considered in the DSM as either deviant or dysfunctional. Now it's not. So
yeah, it was
don't
considered
tell
a
me
mental disorder.
There's something. But let me finish. Don't tell me that there's something called scientific black and white in mental health. There is not. There's some ideas about what's going on, and it can be helpful. A lot of mental health treatment can be helpful, but don't throw that up to me as some sort of absolute, because it's not.
Okay, first of all, I did not throw anything up as an absolute, and I think absolutes are rarely a good idea. Secondly, it sounds as if you're claiming that we have no ability to do scientific research.
I never said that. You can do all the research you want.
Right.
I just
don't
think people ought to listen to
you
too seriously.
I'm not done. Right. So you basically are saying that
you can do all the research you want, but it's kind of like climate change, Melissa. Everybody's telling us that we should be worried about the weather, but we shouldn't be worried about, like, open borders and criminals coming through our southern border. You know,
Karen,
people have to question everything today because there's too darn much propaganda.
They certainly do, but let me tell you, when there is a clear scientific method and it is elucidated clearly and the results are very clearly explained
and
the limitations are explained,
and it's ever
of course
changing.
But Karen, the point is, they're not God. The point is, in the past, in like the DSM-2 or 1, right, when everything was based on psychoanalysis without any testing of the theories, of course you could just claim that being gay was a mental illness without any evidence for
biased,
it, and that's why they claim
Melissa,
that.
If
but
they
now
already
they do
have a left-wing
research.
Bias that Christians are evil for thinking that gay is somehow dysfunctional or sinful.
Karen,
and I,
okay,
by the way, do
all,
not have that position. I'm saying that
have no
90,
business.
Please don't interrupt because it breaks up the sound. I'm saying that the left is populated by nothing. I mean, the mental health field is 90%+ liberal, and they are going to try and support their ideology, just like in climate change.
Okay, Karen, what it sounds like you're saying is that every single scientist who finds something you don't like has openly fabricated their research and has not actually done science, but has just made up stuff based on their ideology.
Yeah, I never
said
any such
thing. Well, how else would that be the case?
I never said any such thing.
But how else would what you're saying make any logical sense?
We have to wind this down now. But I would love to have you on, probably, possibly on another issue, because you're feisty and you're articulate and we disagree, and that makes much better talk radio than having someone on with whom I constantly agree. So
I agree.
I love
and
your
I would
family.
Encourage both
I love
you and
you.
Your audience to read scientific research. I would encourage both you and your audience to try to evaluate scientific research based on the evidence in the research and not
Should
assume
I also
that it's
agree
wrong
that there's
because
climate change because a bunch of climate scientists told me so?
I think you should evaluate each study and see if they did something wrong or not and then decide rather than just rejecting it because it disagrees with you.
What if their premise is wrong from the very beginning? Then it doesn't
then
matter whether they did something wrong. The premise is wrong.
If their premise is wrong, you should point out how it's wrong, but saying
okay, but
they're liberal
the
and so they're wrong is not a logical approach.
Okay. I'm not the scientist, you are, Melissa, and that's not what I'm doing here. We're doing commentary. We're not all scientists, but the academia is trying to dictate the culture, and culture, as we know, politics is downstream from culture. So it's really important that we look at what these leftists in academia is telling us, that there's gender
that.
Is fluid and blah, blah, blah.
I agree.
I have to wrap
it's very
this
important
up now.
To be aware of bias, but it's also important not to assume that just because there is bias, that makes all the academics wrong.
Well,
that's
because every individual gets to make their choice. Is there somewhere that people can connect with you? You never know where this show might go. We might tape it today on this date, and then all of a sudden it'll end up on Facebook somewhere 5 months from now. So where can they contact you and either tell you, rah, 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 we love what you said, or I disagree, or anything in between? This is America. you want to give that out?
If people would like to contact me, sure, they're free to do so. I guess I'll give you my Harvard email, because that'll help me keep it separate from school and other personal stuff.
Okay.
So my alum email.
How about
do you
Facebook?
Want me to share it now?
Can they connect with you on Facebook? That might be easier.
I generally don't friend people that I don't know personally, but if people would like to email me, they're welcome to. And if I get to know them via email, I may well friend them as well.
That sounds perfect. Why don't you give out your email so people can contact you if they would like?
All right. Sounds good. So my email is MFR, that's F as in Fred, MFR@mail.harvard.edu.
Very good. It has been a pleasure to have you, Melissa Rudd. You're always exciting. Your whole family is interesting and longtime friends, so to speak. So good luck in your studies and in your PhD. That's all the time. Thank you for being with us, Melissa.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So thank you to Doug, my producer. That's all the time we have for BBS Radio. Thanks to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish, and who also just happens to be my husband. And tune in next week when there will be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.